Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, in the first half, comedian and all-around thinker Brian Callen joins us. And first, there's Jordan Harbinger. The Jordan Harbinger Show, a different kind of sponsor for this episode, the Jordan Harbinger Show. Well, if you're a fan of fascinating podcasts and interesting people, you should definitely check this one out. There's an episode for everyone, no matter what you're into. Jordan talks with Scott Adams about persuasion in a world where facts don't matter anymore. Man, is he right. Or you go inside the dark world of wildlife trafficking. You'll always find something useful to apply to your own life, like routine changes to boost productivity or slight mindset tweaks to change how you see the world. Jordan's a good guy. We've had him on many times. I know the man well, and he's worth a listen. We enjoy the show, and we know you will, too. So you can search The Jordan Harbinger Show. That is H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Corolla Drinks fans, it's a new year, and that means a brand new wine club. The Corolla Drinks Wine Club is back with 3-pack, 6-pack, and Case Club tiers. Case Club members will get all the Mangria you'll ever need, plus 2 tickets to the Corolla Family Barbecue, headlined by Lit and your favorite guests from the world of ACS. To be mentioned, any Case Club renewals from last year will get 2 tickets to the VIP pre-party hosted by Adam, Mark, and Drew. 6-pack members will get 3 6-bottle shipments, plus 2 tickets to the Mangria Bar Crawl the Friday before the barbecue. We're hopping on buses and hitting the streets of Los Angeles. Don't worry, we'll only go to the clean spots. Believe it or not, there are a few left. And 3-pack members, we haven't forgotten about you. You'll get 3 3-bottle shipments plus a signed bottle by the Ace Man himself. This year's barbecue and wine club are bigger than ever. Don't miss out. Sign up for your tier and tickets at CorollaDrinks.com. From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Brian Callen. And from Selling Sunset on Netflix, Chrishell Stouse. With Gina Grad on news. And now, refusing to comment on rumors of his retirement, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. The church, they're going to mandate, get it on. Welcome to the show. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for sharing with a friend. Right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
And Brian Callen.
Oh. Yes, sir.
In. Always good to see you, my friend. Brian's got some shows coming up at the American Comedy Company, and that is February 17th in San Diego. Podcast, Conspiracy Social Club podcast with Sam Tripoli. That's only available on Rockfin.com.
Although archived episodes every Monday, wherever you get your podcast.
And, of course, The Fighter and the Kid, yeah. Co-hosted with Brendan Schaub as well. I've been a guest on that show a few times. Always enjoy myself and always enjoy it when Brian's in studio.
Thank you, buddy.
All right. I made some notes, something that popped into my head today. I'm semi-obsessed with our inability to fix problems.
Indeed.
And I always think it's kind of the labeling of the problem. Mm. You know, we go homeless to previously housed, yeah, and stuff like that.
Urban camper.
And we're already going the wrong direction because we need to go junkie psychopath. Yeah. Now we can start directing a cure. But if, yeah, we just go previously unhoused. And then I thought there's 2 subjects that are kind of plaguing us as a city, but most cities are being plagued by this. You think that the subject of gun violence and the subject of homelessness. Mm-hmm. And the cure to gun violence, according to the people that are running the cities with the most gun violence, is get rid of the guns. And the cure to the same people when it comes to homelessness is build more homes.
Right.
Neither one will fix this fucking problem.
Yeah,
they're wrong on both. One is get rid of, the other's add.
More of.
Neither one is going to make
a
dent.
But it's a classic example of why ideology why ideology? And let's there's a dogma. If you're an ideologue, you believe in a dogma, a fixed truth, a fixed set of essentially a fixed narrative. It's a story. So if you – this is the danger with any kind of ideology and not being responsive to evidence and being willing to change your mind and not being so attached to your ideas. Your ideas should not be part of your identity. That's a ridiculous notion.
Whoopsie. Did you tell everyone in 2022?
Well, that's the problem. If you were to say homelessness is also – it's not just about inequality in housing, which is the only narrative allowed in the left. If you were to say it might also be a function of drug addiction, and we can go all the way back to the Sacklers and Purdue Pharma and a bunch of other issues, and also mental illness. Why is that a controversial thing when you get up to Sacramento and you talk to that Democratic supermajority? Why is that? Because it grates against a larger narrative, which they hold on to, which is this notion of inequality. And we have to push the notion of inequality at all costs because it keeps us in power. But it doesn't solve the problem, right? And it's the same thing with gun violence. What people who are gun control advocates, and there may be something called sensible gun control. But the problem is when you refer to people who own guns as gun nuts, and the other side refers to people who don't own guns as pussies. The debate's over now. Right. The debate's over. I'm a Second Amendment guy no matter what, and I'm this guy over here. And then now we're not solving the problem. I'm just purifying my echo chamber. I'm fortifying my walls, and I'm up on top of that wall giving you the finger. Meanwhile, nothing happens for the problem itself. And that's Agreed. What we have to avoid. Well, so stay, read widely and stay interested in the actual evidence.
Well, and you know something, one of the things that was really interesting about what you said is when we drill down on mental health and addiction, these are very, for lack of a better word, these are very sexy topics right now.
Yeah.
Everybody loves to talk about their well-being, their mental health. These are not taboo subjects. So by all means, extend it to the people who are living on the street.
Exactly.
Exactly. Although if I've been around long enough to remember when my mom was called a health food nut.
So that's right.
It cuts both ways.
It does.
We
it
shifted from the left sort of health food nut to now gun nuts mm-hmm. on the
reach.
Right. Yeah.
But there's a larger – I think everybody should do this for themselves. Just remember that most of us only have a couple of tools in our chest. And what I mean by that is – so I've read all the people I disagree with. I read Ibram Kendi's book, How to Be an Anti-Racist. I also read White Fragility, Robin DiAngelo's book. These are not scholars. I have a big problem with those books. It's not that and I've read the critical race theorists, and I really took my time. I read Richard Delgado. I read Derek Bell. I read Kimberly Crenshaw. I really tried to do my best to really give them a fair shake. And it's not as though Ibram Kendi or Robin DiAngelo or the crits, for example, are totally wrong. It's not. It's not that they don't have something to say. The problem is when the only thing you have in your tool chest is racism, it's the only lens you're looking at the world through. And it's just like being a radical feminist. If the only thing you're thinking about is that men are the problem, then you have one hammer and every man looks like a fucking nail.
Well,
just like every problem is racism as opposed – this country's story is not just about racism. It's about other things too.
It's interesting because I had this conversation with Dr. Drew earlier today, which is today's people that are seeing everything through the prism of racism – you know, COVID breaks out. There's some, we can graft racism onto that, climate change, racism, math scores, racism, like
sure.
They're grafting on. I was saying to Drew, it really is no different than an actual racist from the 50s hearing that a white woman was raped and going, I bet a black guy did that.
Right.
And then going, oh, it wasn't a black guy. Well, let me try to figure out a way to get a black guy into this
exactly.
mix. It's really the same mindset.
Yes.
Is I shall make this be because I'm viewing everything through this lens. And everyone recognizes the lens of the old racism, but they're 50s racism, 60s racism. but they're not recognizing today's lens because it's coming from a lot of black people, like you mentioned, who write books. But it's the exact same part of your brain.
Yes.
It is attaching race to everything, especially in many, many cases that involves cops and shootings when it wasn't a part of the case.
Right. I heard a really cool I'm a big critic a lot of times of this, of sort of the academic institutions that seem to have zero pushback from anybody even in the center. And, you know, I heard this Princeton professor, I think it was, said, as an educator, I don't teach my kids what to think. My job is to teach them how to think. And I think that we're getting away from that and so it's turning out just massive droves of people that are really coming out of college, these universities, with one tool, and it's a hammer, and they're applying it to everything. And I think all of us have a tendency to do that. You just gave a good example of that on the other side. And,
yeah.
You know, so I think it's really a question of read the people you disagree with and understand why you disagree with them, but also understand where their value is, because there's got to be a middle ground here, man.
But also, it's – you know, okay, there's people you disagree with. Like, I disagree with half the shit that comes out of Anderson Cooper's mouth. But I don't think he's a crazed nut job.
No.
I don't think he's racist or homophobic. No. He's just wrong, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But you'd still say to me, well, what do you think of Anderson Cooper? I'd go, well, I'm sure he's a nice guy.
Right.
I'm sure he pays his taxes and he loves his family. And then he's wrong about this stuff. The problem is ascribing all this nefarious shit to people you disagree with. You know, he's a hater, he's a racist, he's where that leads to no dialogue. But I also think intellectually it's weak. Like when you think about, you know, maybe a Dennis Prager or a Joe Rogan or a Jordan Peterson or Ben Shapiro. Do you think they're crazed, hate-filled nut jobs?
No,
like,
no.
Aren't there's more college, more books,
more
degrees, more languages, more instruments played,
yes,
more operas attended in that group than any other four guys on the planet? So it can't just be that they're hate monger, fear, scared of those who look different than them. That can't be it.
No.
You just disagree with them, and then we could get down to what you disagree with, and you'd probably agree with 7/8.
You would. Well,
that's
Rogan and I had a long talk about that, because Joe and I have known each other since we were young men. And what we used to do is we get in arguments and just start shouting our opinions back and forth, and that's what dudes do. But as you do more podcasts, as you are exposed to more ideas, people that are smarter than you, different perspectives, your mind starts to change. And what you start to learn to do, again, is just, dude, it's Anderson Cooper, you may disagree. You don't it's not that you're a better person. You know, there are people I know that are better people than I am. My friend is a Marxist. Now, I couldn't disagree with Marxism. Communism is good for fucking ants, not human beings. It works for ants. We're just the wrong species. I'm quoting A.O. Wilson. But at the end of the day, it doesn't mean that I'm a better person. My buddy is a lawyer for foster children. Now, I don't do anything for foster kids. I'm busy. But he's going to heaven first. There's no doubt. So just because you disagree with somebody doesn't mean you're a better person. Number one. Number two, again, you don't have to be this attached to your ideas, man. It's just an idea. And Rogan and I were talking about this. That's an idea that right now is my perspective. It makes sense to me emotionally and intellectually. And I better be careful, because sometimes an idea makes more sense to you emotionally and you forget about the intellectual, because it just feels good. It just makes sense to my upbringing. I might be defending not that idea, but my dad and my mom, because they believed it. And you got to really take stock of yourself. And as you get older, you realize that confirmation bias within your own heart and mind is very fucking real. And it's a real liability, which again is why just be a little bit gentle in how opinionated you are. And I'm talking to myself here, because I'm an egregious violator of that shit.
Well, sorry to piggyback on that. We in this society, you get no points for changing your mind or admitting you are wrong.
No.
Or you get, oh, you got fucking owned. You fucking beta cuck. You get no credit for going, you know what? That's a good idea. So that would be great to fix.
Yeah.
Well, you know, as I always say, I really trace a lot of this from us moving from an analog world to a kind of a digital world. And I've said it a few times, but in the analog world, there's a process. Like today, before 10 a.m., I was working on a project, a building project. And I got with my guy, Sean, and we got up on the roof, and I said, here's what I want to do, but tell me why your idea is better, or tell me what's wrong with my idea, because it's time and it's money, and no one wants to go the wrong direction when it has to do with a physical thing.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? So if you're painting a car, you go, take the bumpers off and then paint the car. And then someone might go, I'd leave the bumpers on and mask the bumpers and then paint around them. And then you'd go, yeah, but by the time you mask off the bumpers, it's faster just to remove the bumpers, and we got to send the bumpers out to get re-chromed anyway. And then you can figure it out, but you don't want to go, I know what I'm doing, mask those bumpers, because you're the one who's going to eat it. In the digital idea world, you just get to be right all the time. You get to keep
your
job.
Or you don't pay a price for being wrong.
You don't pay the price.
So, now, Dan Quayle wrote a book called The Talent Code. I mean, The Culture Code. He also wrote Talent Code. You ever read The Culture Code? Dan Quayle, excellent book.
He's got a lot of range in books.
I respect it. What can I say? I got time on my hands.
You got X Kendi. You got Dan Quayle. I feel like everyone lands somewhere between
them. I told you, you got to read the broad spectrum. But he studied very effective groups. It's a book that analyzes the Phoenix Suns, who I believe are the most winning basketball team of all time under Popovich, SEAL Team 6, a group of jewel thieves. They call themselves the Pink Panthers that have smashed and grabbed. I mean, they rob like places like Monaco, where they get away with $200 million worth of jewels and get away on speedboats. But what he talks about is how they solve problems. They solve problems in real time. And the way they delineate authority, it's really about the best idea wins. If you got a mission and you're SEAL Team 6 and you're going in and people could die, It's about the best idea. Nobody there is attached to any idea. If you got a better idea, dude, it's going to keep us alive, let's do that. And it's a really interesting book about that. It's the way Popovich manages that team and keeps them motivated and stuff, and why they keep winning. There's a formula to that, where he empowers everybody to sort of probably express their best side. Mm-hmm. And that's what's missing for sure in our government.
Did the Pink Panthers get immunity for being part of this book?
These dudes, check this out. They would get caught. It turns out they were a bunch of Serbs, and they'd grown up in the same village, and they'd been through war. And they were all like, they thought they were a special forces group, because the way they move, you can actually YouTube it, the way they would move is so organized. Well, it turns out when one of them would get caught, first of all, they all have to rely on each other. Nobody can get caught. But when one would get caught, they would break their friend out, they would catapult a bunch of tools over the wall of the prison, and these guys would, with bolt cutters, would cut themselves. They never killed anybody, but they just got away with almost $1 billion worth of jewels. So that's real organization. It was men and women, by the way, men and women, and there was no boss. It was all he opens the book with he gets a bunch of CEOs, a bunch of lawyers, and a bunch of kindergartners. And they've got to make the tallest structure, and all they have is a box of spaghetti, like a cube, some paper, and like rope. And whoever can make the tallest structure that can stand on its own wins, or something like that. And the kindergartners won, because the people, they had military guys, the lawyers, and the CEOs, they were so used to delineating authority that they were like, oh, you're the boss, you do that, I'll just listen to you, I'll sit on my idea. Kindergartners were like, that sucks, move, let me try this. And it was just whatever worked. And so it's a good way to open a book. But yeah, I don't know where I'm going with that. But the point is, I read a lot, guys.
It makes me want to read a Dan Quayle book, which I thought I'd never say.
Dan Quayle, but you can read the Dan Quayle book.
I said Dan Quayle. He said Dan Quayle.
Why not?
And I just did a spell correct in my head.
I'm going to go with Quayle.
I wonder how many listeners I lost through my book review on Adam Carolla.
Two Dan Quayle books. Mm-hmm. So the solving of the problems mechanically is such an important metaphor for life. And it's also, you're always in a humbled state, because not only are you bouncing your ideas off other people constantly, but you're actually saying, beat my idea.
Yeah.
You come up with a more efficient way to do this thing that we're working on, which in the building world, the automotive world, the mechanical world, that's all it ever is, mm-hmm. is please beat my idea so we can do this cheaper and faster and stronger or better. But then I also said, making myself sound like a hero. But I also talked to, I called Dr. Drew and I said, I don't get why you not being vaccinated is endangering people at work. Like they say it all the time. You got to get vaccinated, go in because you're endangering the other people in the stadium at the work. But you tell me why. What I keep hearing the same thing, but I can't figure out why. But I don't want to just run with my idea. You tell me why it's dangerous in the workplace if someone isn't vaccinated, but the others are vaccinated, but you can still get it vaccinated and you can still spread it vaccinated. Isn't that a danger to the person who isn't vaccinated versus those who are? And he said, that's right. That was the end of that
one. But the enemy is the idea now that you have to hold to one idea. And anything other than that is heresy and, in fact, racism. So, for an example, one of the things I loved about you is when you had Gavin Newsom on here, who I think is an intellectual lightweight, all due respect. I'm sure he's a nice guy. I know people that know him. And I don't think his heart's in the wrong place. But you said – so the narrative, if you were to say – God forbid, if you were just to float the idea that people of color, especially black people in certain socioeconomic places like South Central and stuff or South Side of Chicago, if you were to say that they are there for any other reason other than systemic racism in many circles, you would be accused of victim blaming and you would be accused of racism. But if you were to, like you did with Gavin Newsom, if you were to say, well, why is it that some groups do better in the 21st century economy, even though they suffered from racism, like the ethnic Chinese, like the Igbo of Nigeria, in comparison to other Africans and even other Nigerians? Well, why is it that some groups, regardless of their skin color, do better, have a very similar immigration experience as anybody who's of a different color? What is it about that? Could it be that maybe some of their cultural practices and their beliefs and the way their families are structured and their value systems are more advantageous to earning a living and upward mobility in the 21st century economy? Could we just have that conversation? I'm just asking for that conversation. You know, and if you want, I'll cite black scholars who are behind that, like Thomas Sowell. I'm not talking about – this isn't from a white mind. This is from a black mind. So who grew up in Harlem, Thomas Sowell. So if I were to even bring that up, what happens is they don't call me a white supremacist. They call Thomas Sowell a white supremacist. Mm-hmm. And my ideas, my question is offensive.
Yeah.
Now that's that orthodoxy of thought, that ideology is the enemy. That's the danger.
Yes.
But that's also why they're super easy to argue with. And that's also why they don't debate a lot. And it's also why you can't apply a lot of this woke insanity at the level of detail. You can't run a society like that. There's no consistency, dude. Are you identifying as a woman? All good. I will never make fun of you. I'll call you a woman if you want. I'll say she. I have no problem with that. I don't want to hurt your feelings. But now hold on. I'm a little confused. If I can do a little bit of testosterone suppression for a month and just consider myself at 6'4", 230 pounds, a woman and smash all the female swimming records, Then explain to me why I can't also identify as a black person, or I can't also identify as somebody who is, I don't know, 15 and enter into competitions as an adult. I don't know how to apply this sort of system of beliefs and this ideology and this quote unquote philosophy to across the board.
Well,
which I can as an American when it comes to things like, I don't know, treat everybody as an individual. That's very easy for me. That's my way around identity politics. I don't care what you are. I don't care if you're a dwarf. I don't care if you're black. I don't care. You're an individual. Are you good at the job? Are you the best person at the job? You're cutting into my spine? I don't care if you eat people sometimes on the side. I want the best. You know,
thoracic surgeon. Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Adam is a thoracic. He's a hobbyist.
A former thoracic surgeon.
No, I mean, it gets back to the sort of Anderson Cooper thing. Like, do you really think everyone who disagrees with you is a racist? And if so, what does that mean? And how does it manifest itself? These people that are so full of racism, how does that work in their daily life? Yeah. How do they go about negotiating this crazy melting pot? The notion that you would accuse someone who lives in LA or New York of being racist is insane, because it'd be physically impossible to carry
on.
It's
a tough place for you to live.
But let me tell you what they mean by that. But let me tell you what they mean. This is why it's important to understand what Ibram Kendi means when he says racist, because he calls himself a racist. So let's be very clear on what he means. So when somebody who's white and sort of from academia calls a black person a white supremacist or a racist, what they're saying is that you are – and this is the critical race theorist thing. And they won't admit it a lot of times, but if you really read it, this is what they're saying. If you are somebody who is a beneficiary and a supporter of the current system as it is – if you support the institutions, that goes for the judicial institutions and the political institutions this country was founded on, then you are de facto a racist because it has put white supremacy at the top of the pyramid and everybody else below that. And so because the culture, which was primarily white, organized itself around that reality, which is white people first, then to continue to benefit, profit, and support the system verbally or economically means you are a racist. And so that's – it's not – Ibram Kendi said it's not pejorative. It's descriptive. Wow. Now, I disagree with him. I disagree with him because I'd like to know what he wants to put in its place. And if you read his book, he wants councils. He wants councils that can decide whether or not your policies are racist. Boy, that'd be a lot – there'd be no red tape with that. There'd be no fucking bureaucracy with that.
Well – I think people think I'm joking, but I'm really not kidding when I say that there is a white privilege. There is a heterosexual male white privilege, and that is in not being in a group and having a leader in that group. I mean, imagine if there was an Al Sharpton or a Jesse Jackson for me. Gavin Newsom, heterosexual, over 6 foot, over 50, white male. That guy's a fucking thoughtless douchebag. I have nothing in common with that guy, and I wouldn't fucking elect him to be dog catcher. That's my privilege.
Yeah. But there are people.
But if you're not, you have to try to support George Floyd and turn him into something that he isn't.
Right.
That's a
There's
burden.
A lot of pressure.
That's the pressure. There That's are, the burden. Or as a woman of color, you have to then get in line behind a bunch of fucking know nothing crackpots, and then you have to live your life accordingly.
Yeah.
I don't have to. You know, the real white privilege is going. That guy's an idiot. I agree with that guy. Doesn't matter what color their skin is. I like Candace Owens a lot more than I like Gavin Newsom. That's my white privilege.
Right.
Now, if I was black or if I was something else, then there might be some issues there.
Yeah.
And that's really the privilege, is not feeling like you're in a group. You're free. You can go do whatever the fuck you want, make whatever decisions you want, hire whoever you want, love whoever you want. That's the real freedom in the white privilege.
Yeah.
Speaking of Gavin Newsom, we do him at the Rams game. But of course, he's taking a picture with Magic Johnson without his mask on, which is, look, it's fine. He doesn't believe in masks, which is fine. He doesn't. I yell, you know, when he was at the French Laundry, everyone was like, oh, what a hypocrite. It's not. He is a hypocrite. But he's not scared of COVID because he's in a large group eating dinner without a mask on. So he doesn't believe it. That's fine. Now leave us the fuck alone.
Yeah.
That's my thing.
Yeah.
Then later on, he does this press conference where he has to do, you know, has to mop up his mess a little bit. And here's where he explains that he was judicious.
Honest.
Yes.
I wish he'd just be honest.
He can't be honest. He doesn't know how to be honest.
Takes a couple of swigs of plump jack.
He wants to be president, and they're grooming him for it. So it's just a bummer.
I was very judicious yesterday, very judicious, and you'll see the photo that I did take, where Magic was kind enough, generous enough to ask me for a photograph, and in my left hand's the mask, and I took a photo. Rest of the time, I wore it as we all should. Not when I had a glass of water or thing.
I want to party with this dude in a suite, man.
Man, he is just he's exhausted.
Water
for everyone.
Great time.
Tap water, no ice, tap water. You good? All right. I'm going to bust out some turkey jerky around halftime.
Is it possible to get like the fizzy water?
No, no, it's just flat tap.
Okay.
Flat tap.
Flat tap. And we got the turkey jerky or the tofurkey coming out about the third quarter. So get ready to party in the suite. First off,
it must be exhausting.
He's giving a speech about mask wearing while not wearing a mask and waving a mask around in his fucking hand. Like he's literally going, hey, man, I wore this thing.
Yeah.
I wore this thing. That's like... I've not been on the set of a porn where you're supposed to wear a condom, but I don't think you get to wave it around in your hand while you're balls deep in a runaway. I think OSHA might get involved. Yeah. What are you talking about?
That's
the condom.
It's
in my left hand.
No, you don't hold it in your
Sometimes
hand.
Sometimes when I go doggy, I set it down in the small of her back.
Balls deep in a runaway.
He's fucking waving a mask around without a mask with a guy next to him who's not wearing a mask, talking about the importance of masking or only when he's having a sip of water. But then later on, he's on the Jumbotron.
My mother used to say that we learn how to communicate long before we develop language. And you can see, this is my thing about Kamala Harris or someone like that. I just look at him and I don't believe him. I can just see the way he's talking, the way he's holding his hand. It just must be exhausting holding that facade. Just be yourself, bro.
He can't.
I know people that know him, and like he's a dude. Yes. Like, he's a great guy. When you were hanging out with him, he's a dude. The minute he puts that jacket on, he becomes a politician, and he's just got his eyes on that presidential prize, like the way Al Gore used to. And it's just like, dude, I don't believe a thing you said. Just say, hey, I didn't feel like wearing my mask. Do that. I'd love you.
I would do.
Threaten somebody. Yeah, get in a fist fight, you know?
Yes.
I liked Biden more. When I heard Biden go, what a dumb son of a bitch.
That's right.
I liked him. I went, thank you.
Me too.
You know?
There he is. He's sitting down. He's not drinking water. And
his
he's
ears
not wearing
protected,
his mask.
Though. Because it's dangling from his ear. You know who is having the exact same problem right now? And it's not just a punchline. They're taking it really fucking seriously is Boris Johnson.
Yeah, I know.
Holding those garden parties over where they were supposed to be working. And I listened to a bunch of news about it. And I was at Jessica Alba. They shouldn't be touching either.
Where's the mask? And nobody's
wearing
a mask.
But their lockdown, you know, England's lockdown was for real. You know, like we have it in some states, but they were locked down and he's partying with interns and they're pissed and rightly so.
Yeah.
Yes, just shut up. It doesn't work. They just came out with the big Johns Hopkins
but why are we still
report that said lockdowns don't work.
Right. But now we know. Cloth masks.
No, right. Nothing works.
But why are we
still
in them?
What it is.
Why are we still in them?
Because these are atheists who've replaced religion with this.
Correct.
The exact same part of their brain.
Correct. You know, I was thinking earlier when you were talking about, can I identify as this and you know, enter into the 15-year-old swim meet? If we do start considering that, then you know how now we look at Monica Lewinsky like this folk hero? Like we never should have treated her like that. We've learned so much about not blaming a young woman and blaming the fucking leader of the free world. Rachel Dolezal might be a future folk hero.
That's what
because
they say.
She sincerely believed what she believed.
Who ironically hates folk music.
Oh, probably.
She had to leave that behind. She had, to, she had to leave Peter, Paul, and Mary behind when she transitioned.
Understood.
But folk hero nonetheless.
Right. In the other sense.
I agree with you, though, Gina. I think that's exactly right. I think she's going to be looked at as the person where it be, if you allow, what's funny is there's always pushback. With any reaction, there's a reaction. And what I love about this grand experiment called the United States is that, you know, people are always on the right are always complaining about being censored and stuff like that. People are making a fortune expressing their right-wing views or expressing their centrist views. So, in fact, debate is alive and well. Politics is alive and well. It's always back and forth. I think Americans have real trouble being in the middle. They have so much trouble. They just, you know, you got to either swing all the way to the right. I mean, everything has omega-3 fatty acids, including my bread, or they're all the way to the other side. It's like moderation or that golden mean is very anti-American.
They almost canceled Bruce Springsteen last year because of a Super Bowl commercial that said meet in the middle. And nobody wanted both sides. That's the only thing they could agree on.
There you go.
Said it many times. Either be on the beach or be beyond the breakers. It's in the middles where you get pummeled.
That's where you
the
get
middle
pummeled.
Of the ocean is where you get pummeled.
It's, where you
it's
get pummeled.
Nice and smooth once you get out beyond it, and it's safe on the beach.
I love when you use surf metaphors, dude.
Thank you.
That's the one thing
There's
about
only
you.
Three more coming.
Do you surf, Adam? I know you probably.
No, I went sea kayaking.
Okay, because you don't have the hair for a surfer. You're like me.
But you have the balance for it. I'm surprised you've never done it.
Well, yeah. I did a move that I felt myself being old because I was at this beach club and the lifeguards are like 19-year-old dudes, you know?
Yeah, of course.
And you know you're getting old when you're trying to young it up in front of someone who makes $14,000 a year and drives a moped, and you're trying to prove yourself
yes.
to them.
You know? Hey, fellow students.
Yeah. And I said to the – I saw a guy go by on the hydro board. Yeah. You know, the board, it's about – twick. It's about 18, 24 yeah. inches above, and they just buzz by and –
flying.
I was sitting next to the 19-year-old, and I was like, I'm thinking about getting one of those buzz boards. And he's like, yeah, okay, pops. You know, like, yeah, knock yourself out. Make sure you wear a helmet. You know, and I go, I think I could handle that. I think I could get up on that. And he goes, yeah, okay. And I go, I could ride a unicycle.
That's what you, dude. I had the most embarrassing experience. My buddy, I emailed you about my buddy Tariq Azim, who mm-hmm. He wrote a book called Empower, which is out. It's a really good book, and he's an Afghan refugee.
When did you start reading books?
I know. Oh, of all people. But he was an Afghan refugee who ended up being a D1 football player, and then he's the guy. ESPN did this 12-page article on him. He's the guy that the NFL sends their franchise players that are having maybe issues, you know, whether it's alcohol or drugs or mental health issues or whatever it might be, or just, but he trains some of the best players in the world, and he's just one of those guys who's kind of like the athlete whisperer, you know. But meanwhile, he said, come down, and he's a buddy. He said, come down and work out with the guys. And I go, okay. And it's all these NFL superstars, cornerbacks. I won't mention names, but guys who make their living as starting wide receivers, cornerbacks, defensive ends, and running backs. So some of them, believe it or not, are a little stronger, more athletic, and younger than I am. I know it sounds crazy. And so he takes us out, and I got to run routes. I got to try to catch a ball against some of those cornerbacks. And then I got to run sprints to see how I would do.
Mm-hmm.
There's videotape of it. And here I am thinking I'm a little younger than I am. When I tell you that, I don't think they were even running all out. I looked like I was standing still. I look like I'm made of wood, and I look like my legs don't bend. Your vision of yourself to run – when one of the guys, Dante Pettis, who was a – I think he's a free agent now, but he's a wide receiver. I believe that if I ran him in a race in 100 yards – and this is – I'm not a fast guy, but I would not hit the 50-yard line. He would be in the end zone before I hit the 50-yard line, and that's not an exaggeration. I couldn't believe how big they were and also how much faster. And the whole time I was trying to be, I was like, guys, let's run routes. Like, let me join you in your workout. And I just heard them giggling as I would try to, it was, anyway, it made me want to quit everything.
Good, yeah. Like I can ride a unicycle.
That's a good takeaway.
Yeah. And you can ride a unicycle.
All right, well, we got that John, is it Johns Hopkins or John Hopkins? Because of John Hopkins written down here.
Johns Hopkins.
Oh.
You got a great voice. Listen to his voice.
Johns Hopkins. It's from the Washington Times. Lockdowns had little or no impact on COVID-19 deaths, new study shows. Lockdowns in the U.S. and Europe had little or no impact in reducing deaths from COVID-19, according to a new analysis by researchers at Johns Hopkins University. The lockdowns during the early phase of the pandemic in 2020 reduced COVID-19 mortality by about 0.2%. said the broad review of multiple scientific studies. We find no evidence that lockdowns, school closures, border closures, and limiting gatherings have had a noticeable effect on COVID-19 mortality, researchers wrote.
Good, California. Now let's revise all the shit we were wrong about
for
2 years.
Now, that's very interesting. That's a Johns Hopkins study. Did CNN, MSNBC et al. Report on that?
No, I did not hear it on
those
networks.
Have we seen that anywhere?
No, they're probably not going to run with it.
But that's
this isn't Oral Roberts University. No,
there've been similar studies out of Stanford that never.
And yeah. They just haven't made the mainstream narrative.
Right.
All the happy news.
Now, why is that? Is that would that be missing? What's your take on the Rogan thing?
Well, first things first, he's allowed to say whatever the fuck he wants to say,
yep.
And he's allowed to interview anyone he wants to interview.
Yes,
that's number one.
Correct.
Number two, most of the stuff that is labeled misinformation, they never go back and explain what that misinformation is.
Right.
Most information that's misinformation today turns out to be a truth 5 to 7 weeks from now. At least that's the way this thing was going. There's countless examples of what was misinformation, which isn't. It saddens me, and it's kind of alarming to see, like, whether it's CNN or it's the ladies from The View and it's Whoopi Goldberg and it's whoever, Joy Behar, wanting to shut down Rogan, or it's CNN. It's like, you guys are news outlets and you guys are comedians slash news outlets and you guys are banging the drum the loudest for people to be shut down. You're reporters, you're news outlets, you're comedians. Yeah. It's sick and sad. Look, back in the day when people wanted to shut you up, there were Jehovah's Witnesses, or they were part of some weird sect of some Christian church or something. Yeah. They were like religious Bible thumping.
Tipper Gore.
Flat earther, Tipper Gore, nut jobs who would go up to Mount Pinos every 3 weeks and wait for the rapture. But these are news outlets who don't want information disseminated?
Do you think any of them actually listen to the interviews, honestly? Do you think that Neil Young and Joni Mitchell and Prince Harry and all the rest of them actually listen to the—
First off, Meghan Markle and Prince Harry can kiss my American sack.
What?
Fuck you.
What are we going to do without their
podcast?
First off,
what the fuck are you guys even doing? You're zeros.
You don't want to hear from their podcast?
The idea that we would worship at the altar, these two fucking phonies, is insane. They have nothing to say. They talk about systemic racism. It's insane.
Yeah.
It's insane that anyone listens to these two fucking idiots who've probably had less life experience than my fucking dog. So shut the fuck up, you two. No one wants to hear what the fuck you have to say, but you're doing a podcast. Joe Rogan doesn't tell you what to say on your podcast or who to book. Could you imagine it ever going the other way?
Never.
Tucker Carlson and Joe Rogan have very strong thoughts about what Don Lemon is talking about or who he's here. Yeah, they make fun of him, but they're not saying you shouldn't have a platform to talk. Why is one side talking about the platform?
It's because it's a pile-on. You've got moral exhibitionism going on here. We're dealing with moral exhibitionists. That's really what happens, I think.
I think it's the message. I think people are getting information. They don't want them to have that information, and I think they want the platform shut down.
You think so?
It's always information that competes with their information, but it also competes with the information, which is— We are now entering some zone where it's like CDC, WHO, CNN, that's where you get your information.
Yeah.
And if you hear it anywhere else, it's a threat to those outlets that give you the information. So unless you hear it from Fauci or Rochelle Walensky or WHO or CNN, then it's not real information, and it's a threat.
Well, I think that also what I notice is that people like to throw around stats and they leave it at that. 3,000 people a day are dying of COVID, and that's all you hear. And all of a sudden, that's supposed to end the argument. But when you just use a blanket statistic like that, you got to ask follow up questions, man. You got to ask how many comorbidities are they dying with COVID or from COVID? There are 1,000 questions.
But it doesn't matter in that you are allowed to have an opinion and you're allowed to interview people and you can agree with them or disagree with them.
What would you do though? Do you think that misinformation, malinformation, disinformation are these things that they are a threat? Yeah.
No, I don't.
Okay.
I because it's always there. It's always present. It's always out there. We need more information, not less information. Right.
And what's the over under on Joni Mitchell knowing who Joe Rogan was before this happened?
Good question. Because I'm curious. A huge fan of both Joni Mitchell and Neil Young. These are real artists. I love them. I have a feeling that they heard a couple sound bites. And I have a feeling that because Neil Young's older and obviously probably very afraid of COVID, may have friends who died, I think his heart's in the right place, which is this guy, this meathead's talking about anti-vax. And he kind of went off on that. But I don't know that he actually gave – if he had really listened to those podcasts, especially the one with Malone and McCulloch, I feel like he would have had – he'd be a little bit more generous in his
– I'm with you. I don't think they know of – if they really listened to Joe or Jordan Peterson or Dennis Prager or any of these guys, I have a unique platform and – position in life where I get to talk to these people. Yeah. I know these people. I talk to people on the right and the left, reasonable people, smart people, opinionated, educated with different opinions, but they're all human beings who want, you know, it's just this notion of like, just think about this jumping off point. Like, oh, he doesn't want to wear a mask on a plane. He doesn't want his kids. He doesn't want the schools to be shut down. Why? Because I don't love my kids? Because I want to endanger my son and my daughter? Like, what the fuck are you even thinking about? Right. Like, think about, extrapolate the math. I want schools to stay open. Why? Because I hate my kids or I don't care about their safety. Right. Like, what are you saying? Or I hate others' kids or I love infectious disease. Like, just approach it from a kind of nuts and bolts of like, what's in it for the person, you know?
Well, yeah, you got to get to what you believe is going to work too. Like global warming is an example. Do you think is the globe heating up? Maybe, man. I'm not a scientist. I'm not going to argue with that. It might be. Is it man-made? Maybe. I don't know. But I'll even give you that argument. Now, here's the bigger question. Are the many different laws you're passing, all those regulations, going to actually cool the planet? Is that your solution, or is there a more creative way to get this job done?
It's exactly the same as COVID.
Yeah.
Which is this thing exists. It can hurt people. Now the question is, what do you want to do about it?
Right.
And do we see an opportunity there for something else?
Yeah. You say shut down all the schools, lock yourself in an apartment, and wear a mask in between taking bites of Fiesta Mix on a plane. And I go, that sounds like bullshit. And then they go, oh, you don't care about COVID. Or,
exactly.
Or they go, we want to have, you know, green panels, and we want to have windmills, whatever. And I go, what about a nuclear power plant? And they go, no, we're shutting those down. Well, okay. Now it seems like we're off the subject of fixing the problem and onto some sort of weird windmill-driven, mask, double-masked agenda that you guys have. And because I disagree with that doesn't mean I'm against or for COVID or greenhouse gases. I'm for whatever makes the most sense.
Yeah, I don't like misinformation. I think it can be dangerous, but that doesn't mean I want a government bureaucrat having the power to tell me what I can and can't say on a podcast, etc. That's the debate.
Shutting down schools is misinformation.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, that's misinformation.
Yeah.
They're statistically wrong. Shutting down society, that's misinformation. Cloth mask, misinformation. There's where it emanated from, the lab, misinformation. There's lots of misinformation that you guys, CNN, has been peddling the entire fucking time. So what makes you the arbitrator of misinformation, Mr. and Mrs. Wrong Information people, for the last 2 years?
Do you talk to any of these journalists you disagree with?
I'll talk to anybody, but they
haven't had you on their network.
I went on the show The Doctors.
That was it.
And I was telling him, you didn't need to shut down the goddamn beaches. And he was like, well, there's a lot we didn't know about. And I said, if you didn't know that, then what are we listening to you for? All right, we got more to get into. Brian's got me fired up. First, let me tell you about BetterHelp. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. BetterHelp wants to tackle the stigmas around mental health. Therapy doesn't mean something's wrong with you. It just means, God knows, we've been talking about it. Maybe you need a little help. Take care of our bodies. We take care of we get exercise, you eat well. How about you focus a little on your minds? It's just as important. BetterHelp, customized online therapy, offering video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. Much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. It is BetterHelp, right, Dawson?
See why over 2 million people have used BetterHelp Online Therapy, and Adam Carolla Show listeners get 10% off their first month at BetterHelp.com/Carolla. That's better, HELP.com/Carolla.
I've always wondered who has that great voice.
That's him. Dawson. He ate that guy.
Can I ask you a really sort of random question, please?
Yes.
It's been on my mind, and since both of you are very smart in this subject, I'd love to know. A lot of people talk about if you just say, well, COVID goes to old people or COVID's only for sick people, then that's eugenics. And we all support eugenics. That's the new that's what I'm seeing on Facebook. So
everything kills old people. Yes. Everyone you know goes, oh, what happened to grandpa? And it's always he got this when he was in the hospital.
Staph infection.
Yeah, or water in the lungs. Sorry. And they go, that doesn't kill 11-year-old Johnny, but once you're 86, that yes. kills you. That's what this does. It's no different than anything else.
Or if you're very, very obese.
Right. Same.
Again,
but
that
the
was
same,
something people didn't feel comfortable saying.
See, I did.
This is the problem, though. When you start, when body shaming becomes the end all and be all, and you don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, and M&M candy, Mars candy is like our M&M guy. That she's the boss, but she's not bossy. We're going to remake our thing because he can't be mean.
Right.
So God forbid you say that if you are 100 pounds overweight, you're at risk of you can be a bikini model for Sports Illustrated, I guess, but also you're not the picture of health and you have a better chance of fucking dying from this disease.
Everybody, not everybody, a lot of people who died of AIDS died of pneumonia.
Right. That's true.
A lot of old people in nursing homes. Yes. What happened to Nan and Grab? Died of pneumonia. Mm-hmm. What happens to the morbidly obese 46-year-olds? They died of pneumonia. Mm-hmm. So there's pneumonia. So have you heard of an 11-year-old dying of pneumonia? No.
Rarely.
Does it happen? Yes, it happens. Yeah. Should we build a society around the danger of an 11-year-old dying of pneumonia? No.
Right.
Well, then it's the exact same thing with COVID. Thank you.
Like
to punctuate with a sniff. All right, let's take a break. I'm shifting gears because I got a new Kristen Bell TV show, The Woman in the House across
the, whole
across
thing.
The street.
I watched
oh,
the whole thing.
Oh, so good. All Ooh. Right. I got complaints right after this. Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies. At Geico, Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.
The Adam Carolla Show presents Brian Callen's birthday cocktail party for January 26th. Let's see who's invited. We welcome American General from World War II, Douglas MacArthur. Italian automobile engineer, Vindo Maserati. Italian-American gangster, the Prime Minister of the Underworld, Frank Costello. Guitarist, Eddie Van Halen. Ellen DeGeneres is here. Let's welcome the great one, Wayne Gretzky. The other guy from Wham is here, Andrew Ridgely. And American actor, race car driver, philanthropist, and the subject of the documentary Winning, The Racing Life of Paul Newman, has entered the building. Happy belated birthday, Brian Callen on The Adam Carolla Show.
Wow, you just had your birthday.
I did, but I love that. I share a birthday with all those people.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
You and Ellen.
That's crazy.
And they share it with you, my friend.
How about that? How about that?
You know Ellen's buzzing about that.
She is. She's
you must have just celebrated your birthday because Chris just told me Newman's birthday was a couple of days back.
January 26th.
Yep. Nice.
55 years old.
All right. So I'm glad Brian watched this show, which I ended up just turning on last night. And I just watched it and it just spilled into the next episode.
Tell me.
Well, they're 20-minute episodes, by the way. How about that?
I know nothing about this. I've seen the, you know, the ads, but I don't know what this is.
It's Kristen Bell and it's the woman in the house across the street from the girl in the window, and there's a lot of rear windowy, murdery looking across the street. I know someone was murdered, but yeah. I drink and I take pills, and nobody believes me. And
is it
blah,
a spoof?
Blah, blah. No.
Yes, oh, the answer is believe it or not. I looked it up after I watched it. I went, wait a minute. If this is how it ends, I'm going to lose my mind. And then I looked it up, and you know what? It's a spoof.
Is it?
Yes, and it changed everything for me because Kristen Bell's so good.
Wait, like, how do you look up spoof?
I looked it up. I went, I wanted to see what the hell happened because the way it ended was absolutely ridiculous.
I didn't see the way it ended.
It's ridiculous. And I just went, if this is the way, I sat through this thing But then I read it was a spoof, and I went, oh, well, that's genius. Oh, now I'm in.
But the body of it isn't spoofy.
It's not. But if you know that you're watching a spoof on these kinds of
– the genre.
On this genre, you're in. I went, oh, damn. Okay. It's kind of making fun of the whole genre. And once I knew that, it was like I wish they'd given me that context before I watched it, because they suck you in.
It plays like a drama,
right? Yes.
That's got a lot of the tropes of a lot of these Hitchcockian and other dramas, right, that have come before, but doesn't play it with a wink and a smile.
Until you get to the end. Oh, yeah, dude. The last two episodes are absolutely where you're like, oh, come on. And I had to look it up. I went, wait a minute. Glenn Close is in the very last scene where you're just like, what's she
really
doing? Oh, yeah. So
how many episodes did they do?
I think it's 8. Kristen Bell is, I find her incredibly attractive. I was so jealous of Dax Shepard, but she's also, she's a damn good actress, man.
She was really good in it.
Oh, she's so good.
Where do we find this show?
It's on Netflix.
I don't know how I missed it.
What do they label it, though?
It says dark comedy mystery.
There you go.
Dark comedy.
Yeah. And it is. It is a dark comedy. Like, the whole thing is like, you don't know what the hell's going on, man. You just, you know.
Well, it was interesting. I started seeing friends of mine from way back in the day from The Groundlings popping up in really small roles.
Phil LaMarr
was one of them. Mike Hitchcock.
Yeah, yeah. He won an Oscar for writing The Descendants with oh, my God. I'm getting old, dude. These are people.
Yeah. I remember all these guys, and I'm like, why are all these Groundling guys popping up in these weird straight roles?
Right.
Without jokes.
Jim Rash
is hilarious.
Trying to think of the guy who played, like, the school principal.
Oh, he's great.
He is. And yeah.
And everybody had these tiny roles.
He's another Groundlings guy.
Three lines.
Yeah. 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 I'm trying to think who played the school principal. Anyway, the part that made me stop in the middle of it, and, you know, spoiler alert, but Kristen Bell lost her young daughter. She died.
Okay.
And she died about 3 years ago when she was 9.
Okay.
And they kept kind of alluding to, you know, how did she die? And at some point they revealed how she lost
her daughter. Don't give it away, but yeah.
No, I'm going to watch this tonight. I'm very excited.
It's so out. You were about to spoil. Spoiler alert.
Come on, man.
Right, spoiler alert. If you don't want to know, Adam going to say, because it's so ridiculous.
Well, that's what made me pause and go, what is this?
Bring your daughter to work day.
Right.
Her father's an FBI profiler interviewing a serial killer cannibal called Massacre Mike. He eats people. And he's got his 8-year-old daughter in the room while he's interviewing Massacre Mike. He's a psychiatrist profiler. And he gets spoiler alert, everybody. Yeah. But he gets called out of the room to answer a question. He leaves his daughter, and he's just going in there to ask a question. He's like, excuse me a second. Let me go out there. I'm going to leave my 8-year-old because it's bringing daughter to work day. And she gets, of course, killed and eaten by Massacre Mike.
It's like Police Squad type humor.
Of course it is, but it's in the middle of a drama that is pretty traditional.
Yes.
I'm excited.
I would have done something different. I would have tipped my hat just a little bit. They could have done a little bit more comedy just to let us in on the joke a little more, right? So you didn't think, because I was the same way. I was like, is this serious? Is this in her mind? What the fuck is really going on here?
Yes.
You know what I mean?
I'm assuming, not having seen it, that the title is supposed to be the wink.
It is in a way, but I wish I'd known that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Maybe it's just, you know, I am very naive in many ways, and I'm face value on most of life. That's why I always believe people who lie, because I'm like, that's what he said.
Me too.
And that's what a friend of mine said.
A friend of mine said, because I'm the guy, anybody who asked me about it, he's a great guy. My buddy made $1 billion. He made $1 billion because he knows how to look in your eyes and decide whether you're going to pay money back or not. He calls it mirrors or windows. If you got windows, I'm going to give you money. If you got mirrors, I'm not giving you money. He can read human beings. And he goes, you're the worst. He goes, the problem with you is everybody's a great guy to you. Everybody's a great person to you because you think you love everybody immediately. And what happens is the guy can be a serial killer. And because you're so nice to them, they show you their best side. So you get fooled and you don't know it until 5 years later. But the rest of us have been going, that guy's a fucking cancer. That guy's the worst person on the planet. And I'm still holding the flag. Nah, he's a good guy. You just got to get to know him. And I've lost more money and gotten more burned by bringing broken and crazy into my fucking life in every aspect. I can't tell you, but fuck it. Break my heart. Keep doing it. I don't care.
Yeah. Jimmy always says, he'll go, that guy's a douchebag. And I'll go, I like that guy. And he goes, you only like that guy because he says nice things about you. And I right. go, that it is my criteria.
Me too.
I got to be honest.
Me too.
He did say nice things about me.
I'm like, hey, you went to jail for how long? Hey, you know, we make mistakes.
Let me use your argument against you. He says really hateful things about me. I should love him.
Rogan used to always say to me, he'd always be like, dude, that you're moving that girl into your house. I'm telling you right now, she's a disaster. I was like, she's a good person. 2 years later.
Yeah.
Fucking the fire engines and everything else, you know.
Well, it's like you've said one time, Adam, and I've taken this to every relationship, family, friends, boyfriends, husband, everything. Something to the effect of, you shall decide the parameters of this relationship. You shall decide how I treat you by the way you treat me.
And you will decide what I think of you.
Yes, exactly.
I've always said that. I don't know why people question that. You know, I feel like we do, philosophically, we do way too much like, well, you know, he doesn't like that guy because he reminds him of himself or they're too much alike.
Yeah.
Now, first off, I love me some me. If you like the Rams, ride unicycles, and like vintage racing, we're going to fucking hit it off. For sure.
That was like with Adam. I came up to him one time and I said to him, because I saw him literally do an entire hour of really good stand-up, and it was all improv. Like he literally was just taking suggestions from the audience, and he was just as funny as anybody I've ever seen. And on top of that, he does it all the time on his podcast. Like I've just watched him. He'll just get a subject and riff. And I said to him, I walked up to him, I didn't know him that well, and I went, you know, you're the best in the world at just improv, at coming up with a subject and being able to riff on it. And he goes, you know, there are other guys. I go, no. Somebody's got to be the best. You're the best. You're number one. And I think you retold that story about 20 times.
That's the greatest compliment I've ever had.
But it was true.
But it was also the reason I think about that. I remember right where we were on in a house off of Laurel Canyon in the valley shooting a movie. And Brian had a part and I had a part. And Brian came up and said that. And it was great. But for me, it stuck in my head because Brian came up and he said, you know, you're the best at this thing. And then I did, come on. And then he went, no, you're the best. And I went, oh, this other guy, blah, blah. And he said, someone's got to be the best. Why not it be you? And I went, yeah, okay. I'm going to stop fighting you over this compliment, like over and over again.
Take the black belt.
Well, maybe he thinks you're the best and you're not, but he thinks it.
Let him.
Just let him say it. You don't have to wrestle
but
over every compliment.
I know a lot about improv and comedy. I've done some stuff, so I think I'm pretty qualified.
That's why it was a compliment, but it also taught me a little lesson in myself, which is if someone wants to compliment you, then just sit back and take it.
Yeah.
Right.
And then announce that I love Brian Cowell, and then Jimmy will go, that guy's a douchebag. And then I'll go, yeah, but he's nice to me. And we've come full circle.
Full circle, baby.
Tim Bagley. Tim Bagley's the name of the Groundlings guy, that I was trying to think of. Mm-hmm. It was all
so funny.
It's a group of guys that were all like a year and a half to 2 years older than me in my Groundlings experience, who were in a class or two ahead of me. Mm-hmm. And I kept seeing them all pop up in these roles.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And
very talented guy.
And I was like, oh, yeah. And so the other question was, why are all these comedic actors popping up in these straight roles?
Right.
And they're delivering straight lines as comedic actors in a straight role. And I started to wonder, like, what was that? But you're saying the whole thing, the tongue was in the cheek the whole time.
The whole time. And also, I think it's interesting that Netflix did a series where the episodes are 20 minutes. And what they found, from what I hear, is that That's the attention span of the average viewer. And that's why no matter who you are when you do a special for Netflix, if it's 1 hour, no matter who you are, most people tune out after about 25, 27 minutes, no matter what you're doing up there.
God, they know more about us than anybody in the world. Netflix knows everything. They can profile each one of us, break it down by demo.
It's also weird that we don't treat pizza that way. Like nobody orders a large pizza pie with all the fixings and then takes three bites and goes, yeah, I get it. I get where they were going.
Tastes like pizza.
Because when you do with stand-up, you watch the first 19 and a half minutes and go, was it good? Yeah, I got where he was going. Like it's like
you go,
even if you love it, you're still like, yeah, I get what he was doing. Yeah,
right.
And got the gist.
If you're a comic yourself, you can watch somebody who's super funny and you're not really laughing. You're just quietly entertained. That'll happen to me. Some of my friends are the best in the world. I'm just watching them going, that's a good joke.
It's a good joke.
Yeah. Everybody's dying.
You become more pathologist and corner at that point than you are audience member.
Movies did that. Once I learned how movies were made. Once I the magic disappeared.
Oh, that's got to be – that's such a bummer for you because the rest of us are still probably able to sustain our disbelief, but this guy doesn't
have that. When I see somebody in rain, I'm like, oh, dude, you had to shoot that in rain. You're freezing your ass off right now. Mm. That's cold and so miserable. I'm thinking about all the layers they're wearing.
Yeah.
Or when I'm watching like Game of Thrones and you've got a starring role, but I see you in the background because you had to be in the background shot. I know for the past 2 or 3 days, you've been an extra and you've had to stand in that one fucking position and pretend to have a conversation with somebody you don't know in a costume and all that makeup. And you were up at 5:30 in the morning. That's what I'm thinking about.
How are you as an audience member at like Penn and Teller? Probably the worst.
I don't know. You know,
worst at a magic show.
Well, David Blaine's been a friend of mine for 28 for 30 years. And so when he'll come over one time, Schaub was there, Brendan Schaub, who I do Fighter and the Kid with. And David came over with his brother because his brother was thinking about getting into stand-up and they were going to ask me questions and stuff. And Brendan was like, he's a magician. Like Brendan was like, whatever. And I said, I remember I went, David, Brendan thinks you're just a magician. He thinks you just do magic. Would you mind blowing his mind? Do you mind? And basically David was like, yeah, I'll blow his mind. Had me go get a Sharpie and had Brendan whisper a card in my ear and we couldn't find the card. But the Sharpie didn't say Sharpie on it at the end of the trick. It said Queen of Diamonds on it. And I got it from my fucking desk. So explain that to me if anybody
could. But you like the majesty of magic. You're not figuring out everything.
Because I don't know how it works.
Okay.
So if Penn and Teller or David Blaine are doing something, my jaw is on the floor. I don't fucking know. I've seen him do that. I've been watching him do magic when he was 17 years old. That's how long I've known David. I still am blown away by what the fuck he does.
I think we're historically, we're at the right time from an evolution standpoint with magic. Because 100 years from now, everyone will know how everything is done, and they'll have some sort of app on their phone.
It'll
be explained, Blaine, and you can do it.
Yeah.
And then several hundred years in the past, he would have been called a heretic, and we would have burned him.
Yeah. That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
We're right at the point of we know he's not a warlock, but we can't really explain it, so we're entertained.
Yes. Well, you know what he said?
It's a sweet spot of magic.
Yeah, I talked to him about this. He did a show for a bunch of people, and everybody had the cameras out. And he said two things. He said, you know, it used to be I'd do a magic show, and it would trend for 3 years. Now you do a magic show, and you do something on TV, and it'll trend for 24 hours. That's a big deal when you're a magician because you got to keep reinventing yourself. On top of that, when you're doing a magic trick, everybody's got their phone out from 15 different angles.
Mm.
So you got to be – you've got to take that into account. Now, he loves the challenge. He does whatever, you know, it takes. But I don't know, man. I can't imagine that. It's getting hard. And oh, and by the way, now you can kind of look up on the internet at least sort of how it's done.
Don't do that. No. Don't ever do that.
People don't, though. It's boring.
Oh, yeah. There's nothing where you think you want to know so bad. And when there's no getting that genie back in the bottle.
No.
Don't do it.
Well, you don't want to. Yeah, I love the magic trick. It's like cooking. It's like this woman is Armenian and she makes this special rice. And I was like, give me the recipe. I want to make it at home. And her husband went, hey, it'll never work. She could give you everything you need. You'd still never be able to make that rice. Practice with her for 3 years and then you might get it. And I was like, that's magic. Yeah. I love that. There's a touch to it. There's a human, you know.
And I like how dutiful the husband is.
Yeah. Because
I'd be like, Marge, give him the fucking recipe. You're blocking right. the TV set. I would be like, I would give a whole soliloquy on the years and the amount
that's
of
like
work.
My friend's dog died. He grew up with his dog. Grew up with his fucking dog. His dad's just an Irish guy working on the docks. And my buddy Finn's dog, his dog, literally, he had it from the 0 to 13 years old or 14 to 15. This is his dog. The dog dies at the top of the stairs and just goes, and lands. And his father just looks, they're all watching the game. His father goes, just turns to his wife and goes, dog's dead. and everybody's like, ah, crying. And he's like, come on, we had it for 15 years. You know, that's a dad. That's an old fashioned
dad. That's old school. Will Ferrell, I should say, is the EP on this. Isn't he the EP?
He's an EP. He's like one of eight.
Is he also an EP on that Succession. Christina Applegate? There's another Netflix thing. There's a Christina Applegate thing. It's just chicks hanging around, drinking wine, solving crime.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Is he an EP on that, too?
A lot of cool kids, man.
Do you remember? I don't remember what it was. And we talked about The Shrink Next Door and how that's not parody. Will Ferrell's leaning into that character. But remember when Kristen Wiig and Will Ferrell did that very serious and sincere, like, Lifetime movie?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's kind of fun for them to do that kind of thing.
I love both of them.
Yeah.
I think Kristen Wiig is beautiful and mm-hmm. talented. Mm-hmm. Like, I think she's – I just love her, man.
She's a fat whore. Dead to Me.
Dead to Me.
Is the one. Here's my whole thing. How many executive producer titles can you have before we realize it's not a job? You know what I mean? Like, oh, does roofing work that way? Yeah. What job site you're on? All of them.
Yeah, yeah, right.
You're on
right.
every roof all the time. There's one of you. Yeah, I'm the best.
I'm the best.
But you've done every house in this area all at once.
Yeah, never you mind how.
I think they get attached because it gets you into rooms or something, yeah. right? I don't know.
We should all get to that point in our career where you just put your name on it, whether it's a show or a sneaker.
Yeah. And then have you thought, Adam, about home. What you're worth in Hollywood? Like, it's an Adam Carolla vehicle. After all the work you've done, like, well, how much money are you worth? That's always depressing when you see, like, how much money you're actually worth, which, well, we can't really finance the movie on you. We can't do anything with you, but, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's weird. It has its ebbs and its flows, like from the mind of M. Night Shyamalan. Right. Like, where that's had a few upwards and some dips and some flats. And
yes, it has.
That's really, depending on what year we asked whose mind it was from.
Ain't that the way it always is? Yeah. Jay Leno said that. He said, any actor, no matter who you are, he said, he was talking to somebody about doing stand up. I think it was Dove Davidoff. He said, keep doing stand up. I don't care how famous you get as an actor. After about 8 years, you're always the last one. You're always the last guy we call out. You're never going to be first chair the whole time. You got about 8 years of relevance, no matter who you are. And then pretty soon, it's just hard to sustain, man. You just can't hit that many home runs.
Well, that's really the tip of the cap to the, you know, the Tom Cruises of the world is really, it's not about their greatest hits. It's about putting together 35 years and no signs of slowing down.
That's right.
That's the part we need to tip the cap to.
100%.
They just keep going.
Brad Pitt?
Yeah.
Still worth what he's worth, man. Johnny Depp lost it, though. Forbes magazine came out about 5 years ago and said, for every $100 you put into a Johnny Depp movie, if he's not dressed like a pirate, you're getting a dollar back.
What?
Yeah. Mm. And that was a big thing, man. They went, look, man, you know, you got to be careful about who you put your – what the horse you put your money on.
Is that because of roles or because of image?
I personally think he got a little too old to be dressing that cool. You can't dress like a pirate at 55. Mm. I just can't have you at my house. I mean, bro, take that long handkerchief out of your pocket right now before I throw you in a flying headlock. And you shouldn't have a bandana on and that much jewelry. I just want to hang out.
Right.
We're gentlemen. Our enemy, we have a common enemy in our 50s. It's called time. Mm-hmm. You're being way too cool right now. You can't be sensual. It's not sexy for a 55. If I walk around and I got my lips done and I was looking at you with pouty lips, we got a problem
it's
here.
It's tough stuff.
I mean, I am sensual naturally, but that's my intellect. Right. You're getting lost in my eyes right now, but that's not your fault. That's more substance.
Yeah, that's coming from within. Yeah.
It's coming from my face.
How much
Adam?
Pirate before Pirates of the Caribbean was Johnny Depp. Like, do you think he just showed up his first day on set dressed like a pirate and just went, I'll just wear this home?
Well, do you know who he was playing? You know, it was
Keith Richards, right?
And RuPaul. Huh. I always thought, I've heard it was a combination of Keith Richards and RuPaul.
Oh, really? Somebody sent me, I don't know if you have it, Chris. Somebody tweeted me a rich man, poor man, but it was can smoke at work. And it was like, poor guy just out in the parking lot driving a forklift with a cigarette hanging out of his mouth. And then it was rich guy Keith Richards up on stage with the cigarette. But that is that's rich man, poor man. Yeah. You can smoke at work. That's
but what was your question? Like, was did he invent the pirate, that kind of pirate?
I'm trying to think. A lot of guys, they a hard hat. It's a rich man, poor man. But no, here's what I'm saying. There's a lot of guys who are actors and maybe they're in good shape or they're studs or whatever. And then they take some role as an MMA fighter and then they start training in MMA. And the next thing you know, they start living it a little bit, you know, and then you talk to them in 3 years, like I entered my first amateur fight, you know, like they start getting into it.
Yeah.
Did he show up and they put all the paisley vests on him and wrapped his head around with scarves over and over again? And did that
unlock the
inner pirate in him? No, or was he going full pirate before that?
I think he came dressed like a pirate.
Yeah.
I mean, look up Johnny Depp when he was younger. I mean, he came dressed. I mean, by the way, he pulled that off for a long time.
Oh, no complaints. I mean, but wasn't he also in a band like Hollywood Vampires and stuff? Like, he was already kind of playing the part.
I went to a funeral for Teddy Demme he was a director, and Johnny Depp made a speech there. And Johnny, because he was in Blow, and Teddy had directed Blow, and Johnny Depp showed up in a top hat with long tails and I believe a walking cane.
Oh boy!
And he pulled it off. He was talking to a friend of mine. I was standing right there. I didn't say hi, but I was looking at him. And I go, well, he pulls it off. You know, he was able to get away when you have that kind of hair and that bone structure. But
you can dress like Mr. Peanut.
But when you're 55 and you're 60, listen, now you're smoking too much. Yeah. This is not going to end well, all of it. We got to button it up a little bit here, right?
I think even Lenny Kravitz got the message. We don't see him in his the bed quilts anymore.
Great example.
He's showing off his abs all the time.
Sure, though. I just mean accessories and accoutrement.
Yes, agree. Yeah. All right. Michelle is running a little late.
She's coming in right now.
Should be pulling up any second. Let me give a plug to Brian Callen who came in here and carried the show, American Comedy Company. That'll be February 17th. And the podcast, Conspiracy Social Club podcast.
We're doing a live podcast in Vegas February 19th. I forgot to say. At Diversion Amusements in Vegas. Get your tickets at briancallen.com. It's going to be Sam Tripoli. He's going to hit me with a conspiracy theory, and I'm going to debunk it live. That's what the podcast is. It's so much fun. And then we're going to do stand-up after that. Two shows.
Fighter and the Kid with Brendan Schaub, aforementioned Brendan Schaub. And you need to go to the website, Brian with a Y, Brian Callen. .com. All right. Well, speaking of successful Netflix shows, Chriselle is here from Sunset. Selling Sunset. I've watched them all. I love good-looking people.
Good-looking houses.
I like when they have real problems. I like the good-looking houses.
Yep.
I'm all in. We'll take a quick break. Back with Chriselle right after this.